The viewpoints expressed in this program are the opinions of the people expressing them and are not necessarily those of Fresh Air Incorporated, its staff, or its board of directors. Looking out on the morning rain, I used to feel so uninspired. And when I knew I had to face another day, Lord, it made me feel so tired.
You are listening to Fresh Air Radio, KFAI 90.3 FM Minneapolis and 106.7 in St. Paul. This is Health Notes from the Hearts of a Natural Woman.
This program will inspire you, inform you, feed you healthy recipes, engage you politically, enlighten you spiritually. Listening to Fresh Air Community Radio, KFAI 90.3 FM in Minneapolis, 106.7 FM in St. Paul. And this is Health Notes from the Hearts of a Natural Woman. And this is Kinshasa. We're talking with Nadia Bijaoui. Her new book, The Other Side of the Curtain, Recovering from Deep Coma. Nadia had a catastrophic motorcycle accident. Technically, she died. Was it a miracle that she survived? The reason for her survival and her recovered physical and mental facilities became her lifelong secret search for understanding. As Nadia states it, there is always a hidden reason we usually do not see at first, giving meaning to a trauma and providing a real chance to heal, to grow, and to transmit. That's what we're talking about this evening, is the things that Nadia learned as she came out in her important new book. Explain to our listeners what happened to you.
I was in the back of a motorcycle. I was 18. It was after a party in France. I wanted to go back home. The friends I came with by car wanted to stay longer. The brother of a friend, I didn't know him, got a new motorcycle and said to me, oh, I can give you a ride home. I didn't think twice. I said, oh, okay, I just wanted to go home, so I accepted. What I'm going to tell you now, I don't remember it. I lived it, but that's what I was told. What happened, because this is still part of the amnesia. While he was taking me home, we had an accident. When I was in a coma, the second part of a coma, First, I was declared dead. The doctor was signing my death certificate. But my mom jumped on him and she said, no, she's not dead. So the doctor said he was tired and he was going to finish the papers tomorrow. My mom called our family doctor that rushed to the hospital. When they left me for dead, he asked the nurse to stay inside, to be left alone with me, and to leave the life support on. I don't know how long it stayed with me. My mom, I'm telling you what my mom told me. She doesn't know what he did. I start breathing slowly and I enter a coma. The first part of a coma, I was without life. I was totally dead. The second part of a coma, I was still in a coma, but I start moving and I start screaming. And when I start screaming, I would scream, slow down, we are going to have an accident, slow down. And then I start screaming, be careful, the car on the bridge, all of this in the coma. Apparently, I screamed that many times. After the hospital and after the convalescent home, maybe 1 year or so later, I found my journal, my old journal, and I had written a premonition dream of the accident. I had written that I was going to have anxiety to a point like I describe it, like I can't breathe, I can't breathe, I can't take it anymore, too much anxiety, slow down. In my dream, everything stops and it's so beautiful. It's so beautiful. It's paradise. And I understand I'm dead, but I don't want to come back to Earth. I was declared dead. My mom got there as soon as she could when she was told by the police that I was at the hospital. And a few hours later in the morning, two doctors came out. I had quite a few fractures beside a head trauma. But they said to my mom, because I was unconscious, I didn't feel any pain. They wanted to try experimental surgery. And if it didn't work, then they will fix my bones with regular surgery. At that time, they refused to cut into the skin and decided to go for somewhere else. It's called surgery by reduction, which is very, very painful, I was told, because they pull, heavyweight pull your bones to restructure the body. So the first part of a coma, I was like dead. It didn't bother me. The second part of a coma, when I start moving, then it bothered me. That's what happened. A motorcycle accident and I didn't have a helmet. I flew 36 meters. Part of my search all my life, I was thinking, why without a helmet, I flew 36 meters? Why did I smash on the floor? Why? I found 7 reasons for my survival. But the reason I was not smashed on the floor was one of the elements that I said, you know, it was what I call prevention. It was my years of walking. I knew how to position the body to protect. I had the flexibility to do it. I did smash my face. I saw double for a few months. I couldn't see well, you know, because my branches were misplaced. So I was seeing two people instead of one for a while. But it could have been much worse.
Thank you.
We're having an important conversation with Dr. Nadia Bishaoui about her new book, The Other Side of the Curtain, Recovering from Deep Coma. If you were listening, I wanted to just make sure that you heard what she said towards the end of her answer. One of the reasons that she wasn't hurt even more than she was, her years of walking and dancing and flexibility, so her body knew how to protect itself. When Nadia first came in, and we were talking about it before we started talking in this interview, you talked about the importance of the body and that every day that we make a little bit more progress. What does that mean to you?
It means every day achieving a little bit more. This I remember. There are some things you can't forget. A while after I wake up from the coma, the first day, the nurses decided I could sit down on my bed after months of being flat. That night I cried. I couldn't do it. I couldn't even sit down. So every day, a little bit better, sitting down, moving on the side of a bed, putting my feet on the floor. Every day was a little victory.
When you were in the coma, as you started to make progress, or even in the dead state, do you have any memories of being out of the body? There's lots of conversations and books on out-of-body experiences. Did you have an out-of-body experience?
While I was in a coma, I don't remember anything. But in the book, I do speak about an out-of-body experience that I had. That was a dream. There are 7 dreams in the book. In one of the dreams, which happened after the accident, a few years after the accident, probably at the time when I wanted to write this book, and I had like vague idea on how to do it because I didn't remember anything. I had this dream. In one of the chapters in the beginning, I introduced Mickey, who introduced me to the other side of a curtain. One time I was with her and she talks to me about some people that I did not know. But she tells me those people are watching over me and I have no idea what she's talking about. And then she described the people and everything. But then she said, but those are in your family. That's for people who are dead now. They are dead for people who do not understand. And Mickey said, but for you and I, they are on the other side of a curtain. And Mickey gave me the title of my book, The Other Side of a Curtain. I had a dream. I was in a theater and drapes were opening and closing, and each time a name was called. And I walk, it's dark, and I'll see Mickey sitting down, but she goes, shh. She put her finger on her lips to be quiet. I am quiet. I watch. Then I understood that Mickey, a voice was calling for people. The following morning, I wake up, I understood that she left for the other side of the curtain. Years later, I had also a dream. I was laying down, and I felt my body, I felt my soul moving in my body. From my feet coming up, and I knew that something was leaving my body, and it felt very, very well. It just felt incredibly well to have a soul leaving the body. It's one of the best physical sensations one can ever have, feeling the soul, because you get like an internal massage. My soul left, and I was traveling, leaving my body, and I was traveling all over, and I was seeing a lot of things. And I felt so well. But then I came back and I re-entered my body. I know that the time will come for good. Then my soul will not come back.
Do you remember coming back into your body?
In the dream, it felt okay. But in real life, it didn't feel okay. Because when I had the dream, the dream of my accident, and when I was in the other side, when I wake up, I was very upset. I cried. I didn't want to come back. I didn't want to come back because I was too well on the other side. It's only years later in Los Angeles, years later, that this lady tells me, also is a spiritual lady and was so pictured, and she saw me the time in the coma, and she said to me, you didn't want to come back. And I say, in my dream, it was the same thing. When I wake up, I didn't want to come back. But I guess we come back because we have things to finish up. But I know that on the other side, it'll be peaceful and a blessed place when the time comes.
Support for KFAI comes from First Avenue, presenting On EXO in the 7th Street Entry, Thursday, December 18th. On EXO is touring with her latest release, Something Profound. Ani's music is a blend of folk stylings and alternative songwriting to convey the struggles of youth in a postmodern landscape. Opening the show is Keep for Cheap, Skinny, and I Am Joy.
More information about AwnieXO at the 7th Street entry is available at first-avenue.com.
Support for KFAI comes from First Avenue, presenting Shrimp Nose at the 7th Street entry Friday, December 26th. Experimental electronic artist Shrimp Nose is back with his latest release, The World Pushed Against You. This new album shows that Shrimp Nose is moving beyond the down-tempo lo-fi genre and moving into new worlds and new sounds. Opening the show are Student One, Blood Smoke Body, Talia Knight, and FIP B2B Wonderland. More information about Shrimp Nose at the 7th Street entry is available at first-avenue.com.
We're talking with Dr. Nadia Bishaoui. We're talking about her new book, The Other Side of the Curtain, Recovering from a Deep Coma. I would be remiss, Nadia, if I didn't talk to you about your mother and how important your mother was in this whole process. Talk to us about your mom. Clearly, your mother had the strength and the determination that a lot of moms don't have. Talk to us about your mom and from the very beginning and through your process. Who was she and why was she important in your recovery?
My mom, all her life after, she had anxiety. After my accident, she had anxiety that the police will come knock at her door and tell her I am at the hospital. She rushed in the middle of the night. She just ran over Sleepy City. She got to the hospital. She couldn't get, of course, into the emergency room. And I said in the book, like when she's in the emergency, she hears two young doctors telling her, oh, she's not going to make it. She's dead. She's gone. Later on, when the head surgeon come out to sign my death certificate, she just grab it from his hand, tears it apart, and she said, no, she's not dead. When I start breathing again, and I was in a coma for 3 months, she managed from the very beginning to stay next to me. And this was unheard in the hospital. Nobody stays with someone, with a family member in the coma's room. She was so persuasive. They probably felt sorry for her. And everybody thought she was going crazy. She was losing her mind. Everybody thought she was not realizing that I was about to die. Years later, when she tells me that, she said, no, they were the one crazy. I knew you were going to make it. I knew you were going to leave. She helped me to come back into my body. Besides the physical elements we talked about, flexibility and my relation to sugar and work, the other elements are explained but neuroscientifically but what my mom did to me. I used to have crazy hair, frizzy, they go out of shape, and they were full of blood. And my mom was very upset with that. And she said, I spent 2 months cleaning your hair, she said, like while I was in a coma, pulling your knots and your blood. And this time you let me do. Yeah, of course, I didn't feel anything. I let her do this time. Actually, my mom didn't even realize that she was activating my neurons. My brain neurons were dead, were totally dead. But by pulling on my hair, like I used to hate it so much when I was a little girl, I hate it. That reactivated my brain. And now neuroscience, you know, backs that up. Then on my body, she was putting cream so I don't get dry, you know, like when you are in a coma. And she was doing that, like also daily. The morning she was doing my hair, the afternoon she was doing massaging the cream. And now science says that massage stimulates the nerves, stimulates the communication between the brain and the body. So that's how my mom gave me life twice.
Is your mom still alive?
No, she passed.
Thank you.
as you came out of the coma and you have become this renowned doctor, how was your relationship with your mom? How did it change the bond between the two of you?
Well, we were very, very close, of course. And then she always would worry that I get into another accident. In the beginning, this was such a bad time for her. And I was relying on her to tell me the story. She didn't want to talk about it. For years, she said, no, it's finished. It's in the past. You are well now. You're doing well. I don't want to talk about it. She was going through her own PTSD. And it took me years, maybe 20 years. Well, I didn't want to talk about it myself for like 10 years at least. And then when I wanted to talk about it, she didn't want to talk about it. So it took me a while. And then one day she started crying and she said, but why do you want to know? I said, I want to know, Mom. My mom was always very close to me. And, you know, even if she's gone now to the other side of the curtain, I often dream of her and I often feel her next to me. And I know she's here, so.
We're talking with Dr. Nadia Bishaoui. We're talking about her new book, The Other Side of the Curtain. Nadia, what do you hope that readers will get from reading The Other Side of the Curtain?
I hope, well, they get hope, certitude, and determination that anything can be done, even if it's painful. For me, I wanted to dance and walk again. But for someone else, it could be something else. Whatever you want to accomplish in life, if that's what you want, you can do it. That's the first thing that I hope people to get, to come clear with themselves, what do they really want to do in life. In the book, the part that I call learning and growing from PTSD, or even in the first part, you know, my mother gave me life twice. I have those talks with myself. It's good to talk with yourself. It's good to know and not block your feelings, not block what you want. Know that in life, we can do what we want to do, what we were meant to do. The second thing is that my book, because I had to find the seven reasons back into my childhood, it ended up like being like such a big thing because I'm talking about so many things that happened in my life. There is also politics, universality, psychology, health and everything. I want that people to get what they are looking for. I'm not sure everybody will get like the same thing out of it. Maybe one part will speak to them and not the other part. That's okay.
You have a doctorate in education and psychology. Did your experience have something to do with where you went educationally?
Yes, my doctorate is in health education, which is a little bit different from education. All my life, while I was looking for answers, why did I survive the way I did? I just couldn't make up my mind with my major. So later on in life, when I wanted to go back to school, in France, I was already enrolled in psychology. In the U.S., I was torn between psychology, biology, health. I couldn't make up my mind. Brain, I couldn't make up my mind because all of those were talking to me. I do have a doctoral degree in health education and a PhD in psychology with a specialty in psychoanalysis, with a certificate in psychoanalysis, degree in neuroscience and in health promotions and disease prevention. So, yes. All my life, I was searching for answers into the science field, yes. And I think I could not have written this book before because, like I said in the beginning and the preamble, yeah, it's a great story, but I want to know why. Until I answer why did I survive the way I did, I was not able to introduce the book properly. I was not able to finish the book. I was not able to feel good about the book. Now I feel good because scientifically I can explain why, and I hope that this will help other people.
Can you tell us about biohealth education and what makes your model for health different and therefore more effective?
Well, I was studying at the university. This time I was at Keck School of Medicine at USC. I was studying all those incredible health model, and I thought, oh, this is so great, but nobody knows about it. Yes, we try to do programs, but program is one thing, at least from my experience. Programs being, first of all, they have to be financially supported. It's a small generalization of what could be so great. So I thought, if I could reach the people directly without any program, if I could reach the people directly with biohealth education, one of the health model is called prevention health model. This has three levels. It has primary level, which is preventing a disease before it happens. That's primary. Then there is secondary prevention. That's when you start having the symptoms or you may be at risk and having the symptom. They call it, the health model call it secondary prevention. And then you have a third prevention. That's when you have the disease, the symptom full blown. But because where I went through, the last prevention doesn't mean dying. No, it just means more work. And I apply this model not only to physical health, because that's originally it was created for physical health, but I created for social health. Because if we don't get along with our neighbors, if we hate someone, I call it a disease. Then mental wellness. Mental wellness, it's like in prevention. And, you know, because people, mental disease is such a bad word, people get scared. Mm-hmm. But no, there is mental wellness first. Primary prevention and secondary prevention. Because like I said in my website, the line is so fine between what we call normal behavior and abnormal behavior, it's so fine. And stress could do that. I have workshops that actually help, whether it's physical, social, or mental. My workshops are classified also in three levels, primary, secondary, and tertiary. But it doesn't mean that you need to go to 1, 2, 3. No, you go to whatever you like. But I survived the way I did because I started in my childhood with primary prevention, flexibility, and my relation to sugar and walking. That was primary. In my own story, when I was getting those conditions and everything, then they could have, sometimes there were secondary prevention. Sometimes it was third prevention, like when I was in a coma and I was dead. So I was declared dead. For me, the third prevention doesn't mean the end. It's okay if it's the end, because on the other side, it's beautiful. It's okay. I've been there. But if we are meant to be still here, it doesn't have to be so painful. Because the passage on the other side will be a great feeling. What's important is what you have in your heart and in your soul. At the end, if we cannot make it, if we cannot stay alive, it's okay. It's better on the other side.
If people are interested in going to your website, what's on your website?
My website is bio, B-E-O, health, like health, edu.com. So biohealthedu.com. I introduce physical workshops. I introduce mental wellness workshops and social health workshops. For us to be complete, physical health by itself doesn't do it. Mental health by itself doesn't do it. Social health, no, we are a whole. We have to be balanced and first of all, know what we want.
Wondering about your observations about things that are going on in the world right now, whether they're things that are going on in France or here in America. The world seems kind of crazy. How does that fit in to the paradigm that you've created in terms of wellness? And I love the way that you put it all together in terms of us not just being one piece, but all of the pieces that we are. How do we reconcile all of who we are in the midst of so much madness?
I'm going to answer to you in two ways. One for, like you say, the global madness, and one for individual. So for the global madness, what's going on is very, very, very bad. And it's more and more upsetting. And that's the title of my last blog was Hate is a Disease. Because of all those hate crimes, you know, we tried everything. We tried punishment. We tried love. We tried many things. It's not working because hate is a disease. And if it's not treated like a disease, then we cannot all heal. And in my blog, I explain, I give a definition of a disease and I apply it to hate. I have a program, it's also in my website, for people who are inspired by helping people. And it's okay if you don't have a degree. You know, what you need is knowing what you want and where you are going. So I am offering a certification. I'm offering, it's also on my website, biohealth education model to train people to do what I want to do. I want to give free therapy to people who suffer of hate. Because giving them $1,000 fine, you know, or life in prison, this didn't work. Because in prison, they get more hate. But it needs to be treated as a disease. And it needs to be seen as a disease. For individual, I offer a consultation. Because sometimes, you know, when it's about yourself, we are all mixed up and we don't know which way to go. We don't really know. My consultation actually is 3 parts. And by the end of the 3rd part, I will tell you what you need to work on to achieve what you want. I mean, or whatever problem you came with, you know, what you wanted to work on or whatever you wanted. It doesn't have to be a problem. The consultation has 3 sections. And at the end of the 3rd, I give you a program that you can do on your own. Or I can refer you to someone who can help you with that. Or I can also help you to do your program.
Thank you so much for your work and this conversation and your commitment to healing us all, helping us to heal ourselves, more importantly. I love that in terms of hate is a disease. I just want our listeners to know that we've been talking this evening with Dr. Nadia Bijaoui, her important new book, The Other Side of the Curtain, Recovering from Coma. And just to remind you of her website is biohealthedu.com. That's biohealthedu.com. If you want more information, thank you for your work. Thanks for your mom. I think that anybody that's listening knows that there's a ferociousness that mothers have that nobody can stop. And when mama says that it's not over, then it's not over. I love that. What was your mom's name?
Annie Boukris.
Programming on KFAI is supported in part by Health Partners. Minnesotans age 65 plus might qualify for Health Partners Minnesota Senior Health Options. The plan includes personal support, coverage for medical, prescription drugs and dental, plus many extra benefits. Eligibility information is available at healthpartners.com/oneplan. Health Partners is a health plan that contracts with both Medicare and the Minnesota Medical Assistance Medicaid program to provide benefits of both programs to enrollees. Enrollment in Health Partners depends on contract renewal. More information at healthpartners.com/oneplan.
Support for KFAI comes from the Cedar Cultural Center, presenting Adam Bohannon's A Very Funky Hanukkah Show, Thursday, December 18th. The holiday season is for all, and Adam Bohannon has set out to combine soul, funk, and R&B to put a modern, funky spin on Hanukkah classics and all new compositions written exclusively for this show. More information about Adam Bohannon's Very Funky Hanukkah Show at The Cedar is available at thecedar.org.
We're talking with Dr. Nadia Bijaoui. We're talking about her new book, The Other Side of the Curtain, Recovering from a Deep Coma.
As long as we talk about my mom, can I tell you something about her?
Yes.
Something else?
Yes.
My background is Jewish. In the chapter in Tunisia, I talk about the relationship Jews in Tunisia used to have with the Arab population. We were very close and loving neighbors. No war between us. I was not living then, but, you know, my family were telling me, like, they were friends with our neighbors, Arabs. And during World War II, an Arabic friend of my family, when he knew the night the Germans were coming to my house, my mom was 11 years old. He knew the night the Germans were coming. He rushed, woke them up, take all of them, and hide them in one of his farm in the countryside. So the Germans never found my family. They took everything in the house. They took, but that's okay. Like my grandfather said, it's all material things. At least nobody was hurt in my family. And my mom was the first Jewish woman who put online in 2000 the story that this Arabic gentleman was hiding my family during World War II. The logo that I have now of a Star Project, my mom's name, it says, it talks about Princess Diana, and it talks about this man as well. Because without him, I will not be here today. And so that's why, like I said in my book, I was raised with universal love. And if it was not because of Mr. Wahab, I might not be here today, because my mom might not have been here. My mom, she was incredible. She wrote this story on the web, and that also attracted a lot of attention. So my logo, Mr. Khaled Abdel Wahab. And then when I met his daughter years later, we were actually at a radio show, having an interview, and they were asking her, what do you think of your father's action that he did, like saving his neighbor, his Jewish neighbor during World War II? And she said, le cercle de vertu, which means the circle of virtues. The circle of virtues, you extend it to your neighbor. Mr. Abdel Wahab did the most difficult thing of the Old Testament. Love thy neighbor as you love thyself. I want to tell you more about my mom. She put this all in the open. It was the first time in 2000 that a Jewish person would say that, no, Arabs were our friends. Arabs hide us. That after some other story came up, but she was the first one. I learned like universal love from my mom.
Thank you for coming and sharing your story and your observations and the ongoing work that you continue to do. Again, the name of the book is The Other Side of the Curtain, Recovering from Deep Coma.
Heaven. Oh.
Have you ever stopped to wonder why children do not concern themselves with all the problems in the world? They seem totally willing to believe that somehow, some way, everything will be fine. And somehow for them, it is. Children do not have philosophical ideas, political positions, or principles to uphold. They know what they know. They accept, and they never try to convince you that what they know is real. Children ask for what they want. They refuse to take no for an answer. And they know that if you say no, Grandma usually says yes. Children will try anything once. They will go anywhere that looks safe. They are not hung up on styles or profiles, positions or postures, power or powerlessness. Yet we believe children don't know, can't do, shouldn't have, can't be, won't make it without us. Isn't it a shame we don't remember as adults that we are always children of God? Affirmation. Today I am a child again. That comes from the book Acts of Faith. Iyanla Vansant.
Endurance training. Can there be too much of a good thing? Long distance endurance training is becoming more controversial as more and more evidence comes out from research that suggests it can actually be deleterious to your health. Just to be clear, we are not talking about moderate exercise programs. So this health note is not your excuse to stay on the couch and out of the gym. This health note has to do with endurance, and particularly prolonged endurance or long distance training. Many arrows point to the negative effects endurance training may have on our hearts. This is, in many ways, contradictory to common sense. Exercise is healthy and prevents a lot of disease. However, you can have too much of a good thing. A study published in the Journal of Applied Physiology in February 2011 studied the cardiac structure and function of lifelong competitive endurance athletes, they dubbed veteran athletes. These athletes were all 50 years of age or older. This study used cardiac magnetic resonance imaging to assess health of the heart and heart function. The study included 12 lifelong male endurance athletes between the ages of 50 and 67. They matched their studies with 20 age-matched controls. They also compared 17 younger male endurance athletes with an average age of 31. What they found is that 50% of healthy, asymptomatic, lifelong veteran male athletes had myocardial fibrosis, and 0 subjects in age-matched veteran controls and young athletes had this. Myocardial fibrosis is thickening of the heart valve and walls and increased collagen production in the heart. This can eventually lead to heart failure due to the thickening and stiffening of your heart. This stiffness and thickening results in an inefficient pump, which does not work out with such organs as your heart. A study in the journal Circulation published in 2011, studied what happens to rats who are conditioned to run at a vigorous pace for a sustained period of time. The rats put in this program were put in for 4, 8, and 16-week time periods. Time-matched rats served as controls for this study. The rats' hearts were then studied at 16 weeks. The exercise rats developed eccentric collagen deposits in the heart. They had eccentric hypertrophy, or enlarged hearts, and dysfunctional diastolic heart rhythm. The diastolic point of a heartbeat is when the chambers of your heart fill back up with blood. This is essential to good blood flow, because if your heart chambers cannot fill up, they cannot pump blood. Enlarged hearts, in a metaphysical sense, is a wonderful thing. When it comes to your physical heart, it is nasty. Your heart cannot pump efficiently. If, after 16 weeks of intense exercise, the rats were allowed to be sedentary, the changes in their heart reversed. This again shows that intense, long-term exercise may not be good for us. Of course, rat studies do not always match up with what would happen to a human. Now, don't give up on exercise. This is not an excuse to stop going to the gym or for your walks around the lake. Exercise can literally keep you younger. We have to take into account the hundreds of studies that show how beneficial exercise is. Research published in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences suggests that exercise reduced or eliminated every detrimental effect of aging. And mind you, this was done on mice that are genetically programmed to grow old faster. These mice have genetically malfunctioning mitochondria. Mitochondria are the energy-producing parts of your cells. Once they start getting lazy, our age starts showing. As mitochondria start to weaken or die, our muscles and brain shrink, and our hair falls out. The mice in this study ran at a moderate, brisk pace for 45 minutes, 3 times per week. At 8 months, or in human years, it would be 60 years of age, the exercised mice had more mitochondria, more muscle, and more spunk than the sedentary mice. So it very much seems you can have too much exercise. Unfortunately, to date, there seems to be too many variables to be sure exactly what is going on. Age, exercise intensity, and exercise duration all seem to be the main players. In general, exercise is vital to a longer, healthier, and dare I say, happier life. However, there can be, as studies suggest, too much of a good thing. Exactly how much and how long we should exercise is largely unknown. For more information on healthy exercise tips, listen for more health notes. Check in with your doctor to make sure you are fit for any levels of exercise. And start slow and work your way up to a more intense exercise program. Until then, do not use this health note as an excuse to not exercise. You are better exercising than remaining sedentary. In fact, I would argue you are better off doing long distance endurance training, which is possibly harmful to your heart in the long run, than you are by being a couch potato. This has been a health note by Dr. Jonathan Arnold of Arnold Chiropractic and Acupuncture.
Did you know you're listening to Fresh Air Community Radio?
That's KFAI, 90.3 FM in Minneapolis and St. Paul, or online at kfai.org.